Y'all Elite Podcast.
Y'all Elite Podcast.
Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
In a minute. Sean Spears. Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
1, 2, 3, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Aftershock. I'm your host, Zach Perez, at Spots High on Twitter, and an interesting week of AEW Dynamite heading into Thanksgiving here. It's always interesting when you have a week of television heading into the holidays. It always puts a weird pressure because there's either not quite as much viewership or some different kinds of viewership as people are either traveling or, you know, there's some different aspects leading into maybe not putting as much of a big blowout kind of show. But we did have some very interesting moments, some great television put on by AEW and some not great television put on by AEW. So we're going to run right through it this week and get right into it. So we started off the show this week with Le Champion with his Thanksgiving celebration. And I always feel like I'm Pierre Escargot from All That, if any of you guys remember that show on Nickelodeon. But that was what we kicked the show off with. And this was an interesting little segment. Not anything too spectacular in terms of what they did. It, kind of exactly what you'd expect. A lot of fan service for Chris Jericho, the Inner Circle all getting a turn of giving gifts. It was almost kind of like a little early Christmas ceremony, you know, all of them bearing gifts to the newborn king, if you will, and all just kind of bringing down their different contributions to him. So they're all walking down and bringing what they have, and you know, they crowned Chris Jericho a Boricua. That was a pretty interesting moment as well, you know, giving him all sorts of different little gifts, a little bit of the 40, which was a nice little moment. And he did introduce his own official little bit of the bubbly as well, which if you go to a little bit of the bubbly.com, which I tried to do last night, it is already sold out within, I think, the first 10 seconds. It seemed like the website being up, it crashed and was sold out. So it shows you how viral everything all Elite Wrestling does these days. But that's already where they're at with that. But this whole segment was pretty awesome leading into the ending, which I think was a little weaker than I expected. You know, we ended up having the reveal that there was Jericho's father, Ted Irvine, which was really great. He ended up getting the nice heel heat for the fact that he was wearing the Rangers jersey, the Chicago Blackhawks insults and everything like that. So that was a nice little call out, and having the crowd get involved that way. But the only thing that was a little off was the Justin Roberts beatdown was a little mistimed. It seemed like there were some miscues there. But it was just the ending with SCU was the main thing that was mishandled a little bit. Seemed like it just didn't quite hit. The brawl was a little off. Could have probably used maybe a little more of a shock value moment. It seemed like, you know, maybe having somebody swing maybe that mural behind there or something like that would have made for a little more of a dramatic effect. But it seemed like for all the buildup that happened, a better fitting ending would have made this a really awesome, memorable segment. But it's kind of nitpicking, I guess, really, because this was an awesome way to kick off the night. And I think it kind of delivered on all of exactly what you expected it would. So I think this was a great way to kick off the night and is exactly the kind of thing, I don't want to use the word filler, but it's exactly the kind of thing you want to have when you're getting these holiday kind of shows. So a great way to bolster your program. There you go. But next up, we had the Best Friends taking on the Lucha Brothers, which was a nice tag team contest. Kind of a little bit, I guess you would say, kind of followed a routine. kind of a back and forth. The Lucha Brothers just kind of dominated for a little while. The Best Friends kind of started going back and forth. But, you know, I think that this was a very simple matchup. It told a simple story, but I think that they're trying to slowly build up the Best Friends in a simple fashion, an old school fashion, and I think that it's well deserved. I think that the Best Friends are very good, and given that they have Orange Cassidy in their corner and the wealth of experience they've had on the independent scene, I think that AEW is the perfect environment for them to really grow and have a platform and an audience the size of which they've never really had before, and that's only something that can be good for them. And I think that in the future they can put on some really big wars with the Lucha Bros. They had some excellent moments in this matchup. It was a little bit dry in the sense that it wasn't quite as big of a blow-off as it could have been between these two tag teams. I think that you'll see more between those two in the future. I think this was meant to kind of be a little bit of a teaser matchup, so it wasn't really meant to show you everything of what they have between each other. There were flashes of what they have. A nice little moment with Trent going over the top rope with his senton. But overall, there was a lot of typical tag team action in the sense of it was very back and forth, one team going at a time, hitting their offense. And while there was flashes of some great offense, you didn't get a lot of the signature Rey Fénix offense. You didn't get a lot of the signature Lucha Brothers offense. You just got some flashes of it, kind of the flash in the pan moments. So it was definitely kind of that hangover effect of the holiday episode where nobody's really going to quite go out there and give their best performance. I don't want to use that word, but you know, their WrestleMania performance, there you go. They don't want to give that type of show for this episode. So you're getting these flash moments of some awesome moves and definitely some moments that you'll pop out of your seat for, but it's not quite on the level that you normally see where it's constant motion, constant action like you normally get out of the Lucha Brothers especially. So this ended up having Trent take the win with the Crunchy, which was a nice little finish, a nice little ending, and it does kind of play off the fact that he also took a victory on Dark, so it's kind of continuing the rolling momentum that the Best Friends have, and it's continuing to push them along and continuing to show that they are having some sort of advantage over the Lucha Brothers. Whatever it is, they seem to have some sort of personal way of getting one up on Pentagon and Fénix every time they face off against each other. So it'll be interesting to see if they can right the ship against them, or if that continues to be the feather in the cap for them that leads to them potentially getting a tag team title shot against SCU. And especially now that, as we'll see later on in the night, Le Champion does retain his championship. But next up here on the card, we had Hikaru Shida and Chris Statlander taking on Emi Sakura and Bea Priestley. And although this was a better matchup, I think, for the AEW women's division, some very talented women in this matchup, I don't really think they really had a good fit amongst each other. I don't really think, although you could take different pieces of this matchup and probably make some good matches, I don't really think that they really made any sense as two tag teams. I think that this is what I complained about a few weeks ago, where, you know, they just kind of randomly pieced together tag teams out of their women's division, and it doesn't really do any favors for anybody. And I think that this kind of suffered similarly to what happened at Survivor Series in the WWE as well, where it's just a matter of the women involved really stylistically don't make sense in the ring together. And when you try and push that and try and force it, try and just say, you know, especially when you start adding more and more people into that mix, it just really doesn't do well to the crowd. And it's rather ironic that it's both, you know, both of those contests took took place in front of a Chicago crowd because they responded pretty similarly. You know, they started off trying to get into it, and it just went stale very quickly. And I think that, you know, although there were very great moments, and I think particularly Chris Statlander had some very shining examples of the fact that I think she is a potential star in the women's division here, I think that overall this just did not make sense and was a momentum killer for the night in terms of the match quality. And I think that it really sticks to the point that you should not just be randomly pairing these teams together. And I think it's hurting Emi Sakura, as it's really just, she doesn't seem to have a place in where she should be. And I think that that's rough for somebody who's such a longtime veteran and who should be able to respond to the crowd better. And I think that they really need some angle work for this women's division as well. I think it's sorely lacking. And I think that that's something that is drastically needing attention at this point and should really be addressed sometime in the near future. So hopefully that'll be addressed sometime soon, as we still haven't seen the blow off for the Brandy and Awesome Kong situation. So, you know, I haven't still fully watched all of Dark, so I don't know if something was done on there, but I need to catch up on that as well. Long holiday week. But, you know, it just is one of those things where, you know, the women's division is not going to get any better if they don't start putting some more attention on it on a weekly basis and giving some one-on-one attention. So hopefully that'll change and trend the right direction. But next up, we did end up having Cody make his return to action, as was advertised all over social media leading up to the week. And as a Knicks fan, I thought it especially ironic that he ended up having Matt Nix do the job to him. I thought that was hilarious that he had him standing in the ring all ready to go just to do the job and ready to take the pinfall there. Quick little squash match and looked really nice. Nice little springboard cutter and just a few nice little spots before hitting the figure four. You know, some just simple quick action, nothing too complicated. A single leg to open the match up, and you know, just simple chain wrestling. You know, Cody at his finest, just doing his best technical wrestling and just really showing off the nice figure four for the quick submission, and just all around a nice way to get a crowd pop and get the Chicago crowd involved. And like I said, when you're having these holiday episodes, having the nice little crowd involvement moments is nice. And he grabbed the microphone, and it seemed like he was going to have that nice little call out to MJF and was talking for a bit, and then he was interrupted by what is going to be the Blade, the Butcher, and the Bunny. And it was a weird moment. It definitely was not a simple moment. It looked like, you know, the ring had been cut out from underneath, which I assume, you know, would, or it was the Blade, as Excalibur ended up saying. And it fell flat on the crowd, and I was intrigued for the simple fact that it was just so odd. But it, looking back at it over again, it was a little bit uncomfortably odd. It just didn't fit in, and to have it happen against Cody returning, it cheapened it a little bit, and I feel like it could have been handled a little bit better, and I feel like there could have been more heat achieved. I understand that the headshot chair moment probably soured a lot of the ability to do some things, but you know, it just, for a, you know, debuting attack, it was just a little bit weak, and the crowd just did not respond. And I think that's always a big indicator for me. If the crowd is not really responding, then you really haven't quite connected with a segment, and I think that was what I was looking for in that moment. So having Ali return with that gimmick was definitely nice. But overall, I think that this is something that can develop, and I am very much intrigued to see where it goes. But in this time, it just fell just a little bit flat, and it reminded me quite a bit of how the Dark Order failed at the beginning and how they had to have this redemption, as we'll see later on in the night with their video package, which is something that I want to touch on as well. But I just think that, you know, it didn't really make sense in the context of the night and what could have been done with this segment and how much time they could have filled. And it just, I really think that they could have debuted them better, maybe by having them earlier in the night with the, you know, Trent and Lucha Brothers match. You know, that would have been a shocking thing, especially because we had a shock match already with Trent taking the victory over Pentagon there. So it the story was already told in a sense, you know, albeit on Dark. So there's different ways they could have achieved the same ends, essentially. So I question the way that they came about it. I understand that Cody is kind of using his name value to add to the debut for them, but it was just a little bit odd the way that things transpired there. But I do have to say that it did add to my interest level, so I think that was achieved in some sense. But overall, I think that it was nice to see Cody back. I just recently got to see him at a meet and greet here in Albany. So that was a nice little moment to see him returning right after that, after getting his autograph and taking a picture with him. So it was cool to see him returning back to action and hopefully back and healthy. You know, all the taped up ribs and the eye still all messed up like it was in the picture. So it definitely was cool to see him back, and hopefully we'll see him back in a full capacity sometime in the near future and not just squashing on the Knicks. It was pretty, like I said, it was a pretty apropos to see him go from New York to squashing the Knicks in just a matter of days like that. But, you know, I digress. We'll move along here and move on to what was definitely match of the night for me, Kenny Omega versus Pac. And just simply put, this was a beautiful matchup. I mean, so much. If you want to talk about selling, Pac is by far and away one of the best sellers in all of wrestling. I mean, there was a big boot by Omega at one point that it looked like he had been kicked probably by at least, you know, the force of 12 donkeys. I mean, it just forcefully kicked the you know, chest plate out of the man. It looked like it was ridiculous, and he forced him into the turnbuckle and smacked his back so viciously. I mean, the way he throws his body around the ring is insane, and the height that he gets off of just the most simple maneuvers. And Omega 2, he sold one particular lariat where he just flung himself backwards. Reminded me very much of the Keith Lee Roman Reigns powerbomb moment that happened at the end of Survivor Series as well. I know I'm crossing over WWE and AEW products. What are we doing here? But, you know, it's just the selling there was just so on point, and seeing him kind of throw himself for that lariat and kind of nearly throw himself onto his neck was very, you know, Kenta-esque. It just was beautiful. And seeing the way that he was desperately trying to right the wrongs of this losing streak that he's had for so long, and this, you know, blood feud-esque situation that's kind of brewing between these two, where there's this natural hatred between Omega and Pac, just for the sake that Omega is this kind of fun-loving guy and Pac is a bastard, as they love to refer to him as. So it was very interesting in seeing this, you know, very physical contest end up ending in this very technical way was very apropos for the style of how Omega is. And it just, I loved the way that they told a story, and it was very very well told as well in the moves that they did it in a rather short period of time. It was a beautiful, smart contest, and I think both men really mesh so beautifully in the ring, and they come together and have a beautiful chemistry. And I think a lot of people have complained and say, why do you keep putting this match on, you know, given that it's a pay-per-view quality match? But when you have these matches that are so perfect and just the exact thing that you want on television, it delivers exactly what you want from AEW. And I think this was such a bright spot on an otherwise a little bit underwhelming night of Dynamite. I think that this was exactly what it needed, and it really saved the night in terms of the match quality and the overall delivery of what they needed from Omega as well, because having him kind of steal this one in the way that he did made sense storyline-wise as well, and it keeps Omega looking like he's a little bit desperate right now, and it was very smart stuff, and I love the way that they're still telling storylines with Omega, and they're not just making him look like this dominant figure in AEW, which is very smart, and I love the fact that they're kind of getting people behind him in an interesting dynamic. So I love that, and I'm continuing to push for the way that they're developing him, and I would love to see another, you know, eventual gimmick match between Pac and Omega, maybe a ladder match, or, you know, a TLC if they can somehow work around the obvious, lawsuit waiting to happen if they put on something like that, you know, maybe add a fourth, you know, maybe chains, or I don't know, you know, I'm sure somebody in AEW could figure out some sort of workaround for that they can work for, but anyway, next up we had the Dynamite Diamond Ring matchup between Hangman Page and MJF, which was a, you know, okay little matchup. Not exactly the most amazing in-ring contest. Some little botches here and there in the presentation leading up as well, with the cueing for the promo for Hangman Page, which was a little lackluster as well. I think it was not exactly the type of stuff that builds a career on, but just really not something that you want to see between two of the probably prominent figures for AEW in terms of what they want to build the company upon. So it just felt like they didn't really have a good chemistry between them, and I think that MJF in particularly did not look as strong as you may have hoped, but I think that it was still a solid matchup. It just was definitely not exactly a huge heated brawl or a technical showcase or anything like that. It was kind of a very simple story-driven matchup, and you had Wardlow getting involved, and then you ended up having MJF do this weird half-assed crossroads for the finish, and that was just a very awkward, looked very ugly. I don't know if it was, you know, that it was Hangman didn't go up for it correctly, or MJF didn't deliver it correctly, but it was just, it didn't quite look right at all, and even JR called it out on commentary, because it was just, it kind of had to at that point, and it played off of the heelishness of MJF well as well, so it was a good kind of audible by JR, but it just really spoke to the fact that it was not a polished matchup by any means. So there was some good heel work in the match. MJF plays the heel very well. I think that him and Jericho on any given night go back and forth for best heel in the company, and that's saying something, given the fact that, you know, Jericho might be one of the best heels in the world on any given, you know, year. So it's just, I think that this matchup just did not quite work in terms of them meshing, and it may just be a matter of two, that it was a little bit forced in terms of the fact that they were fighting for something that was kind of a quickened and recently announced accolade. So I think maybe in the future, if this was for a pay-per-view or something like that, we might get a little more out of them. So we'll explore this more probably down the line, especially given the fact that they're going to have very long careers. But it was nice to have DDP come down to the ring and present MJF with the ring, which was apparently, you know, valued at over $4 billion or something like that by the time MJF delivered his final promo. I think he said $45,000, but, you know, as he goes on, I'm sure the more he talks about it now, it'll get there eventually. But it was nice. He ended up having a nice little spot where he basically played the face very nicely and said that he was upset with MJF for his actions and having Wardlow deliver that one punch to Hangman that ended up leading to the ugly Crossroads finish. So he ended up basically getting in his face, which led to Wardlow getting in DDP's face, and a nice little moment where DDP just said, you know, you don't want to look stupid having a 63-year-old man whoop your ass all over the streets of Chicago, which I thought was just a very awesome little simple one-liner moment. And then they got into it, started brawling a little bit, and it wasn't, you know, anything too complicated, but it saved an otherwise very off kind of match, and it wasn't anything too special. So I think that was a nice capper for it, and you know, placed MJF much better off than he would have been if they hadn't have done the presentation that night. So, you know, I think that was a smart business move to have that be placed on that night. And I think hopefully they'll be given more chances to work together in the future. But I think that on this given night, it was not a very polished matchup and definitely not one of the highlights of the night for sure. But we ended up having a little skirmish, a little brawl between Dustin Rhodes and, you know, the Inner Circle here, with him kind of coming out and basically saying that he had his cast on and that he was looking out for blood with Jake Hager and that he wanted to come for him for what he did. And this just kind of really fell flat for me. I don't know if it was Dustin's delivery on the mic, which it wasn't bad, admittedly, but it was just kind of, I think it's the fact that there really hasn't been enough blow-off with this yet. There hasn't been enough matches. I think that they just kind of need to start getting a little more creative with the way that they handle things with this feud now, because it's just kind of been a lot of brawling, which is kind of starting to all mesh together and look the same. So I think if they start involving maybe some more mic work, maybe, you know, a little less of the interrupting, brawling kind of formulaic experience, that things will get a little bit better with this. But right now it just feels like everything is all building to this matchup that we know is going to happen but doesn't. And I think that that's the problem. And so I think that if they get a little more creative with it and some video packages, something, I think that that will be much better than just having these brawl. So I think that's what we're trending towards, and hopefully they'll do that sometime in the future. But while I'm on that subject of the video packages, one thing I did want to bring up was the Dark Order video package that aired at some point. I forget which segment it aired in the middle of, but I did want to touch on that, because for a long time now, I've been kind of on the fence about the Dark Order, and no longer. I mean, the past 2 weeks, the Dark Order video packages have been nothing short of fantastic. They kind of remind me of some sort of mixture of, like, Grand Theft Auto with the Epsilon, you know, that sort of thing. It's very cult-like. It's just the genius of the fact that they're going with the idea that the mask is to basically hide yourself, your true identity within society. It plays on, you know, the Illuminati. It plays on all sorts of different conspiracy theories, and it's a very smart kind of plays on a lot of simple fears and just a lot of smart things, you know, having them say, you know, we could be your teachers, we could be your politicians, and having Evil Uno be this kind of preacher and standing in front of this group of disciples and basically having it be that Stu Grayson is his kind of ultimate subject, who is kind of going out there and getting and recruiting these future subjects for him. I thought that was all very, very smart stuff, and I'm 100% now in, and I think that you should join the Dark Order. No, I'm just kidding. Not quite that full bore with it, but I think that it was a very awesome, nice little moment, and I think that it's probably where they should have started off with. I think that if they hadn't have just done the lights, instead just had them come out with this at the very beginning and said, this is how we're going to present them. You know, we're going to slow build and make people anticipate the moment where somebody is going to get destroyed by these creepy masked individuals. I think that would have much better lent the hand to them getting a nice reaction, kind of similarly to how Bray Wyatt was built. Of course, the comparisons have been there and will be there because of how well received The Fiend has been, of course. So, you know, I think if they would have kind of slow built and taken some pages out of that book, because, you know, of course, some people will say they've ripped the entire thing off from him. You know, so if they would have just taken some of those pages anyway, because they're going to be compared regardless, I think that it would have been smart to just kind of slow build, slow burn, and let them kind of let everybody anticipate the moment when they had that lights out and appearance moment of sitting on the throne or attacking. And I think that would have much rather built them as a monstrous group rather than this kind of weird what's going on, why are they here kind of situation as we got with their debut in the first place. Moving back onto the main card here, we ended up having the AEW World Championship match, which was Scorpio Sky taking on Le Champion, which was the matchup I wrongly predicted last week, as Le Champion ended up retaining here against Scorpio Sky. And this was a decent little matchup, but I was expecting a little bit more out of these two. I think Scorpio Sky was kind of going kind of high octane, full pace, you know, especially it's his first AEW championship match, and I think Chris was kind of slowing the pace down a little bit. There's a lot of storytelling being done in this matchup that I think was a little bit kind of tacked on and a little bit forced. Jericho was doing a nice job of storytelling, continuing his little mini feud with Aubrey Edwards that he likes to have in all of his championship matches now, it seems. But ended up doing a few nice little spots as Jericho locked in the Lion Tamer early, and Sky was able to immediately kind of work his way to the ropes and show his resiliency off. But, you know, Sky ended up locking in a submission of his own as he hit a cutter leading into the Dragon Sleeper. A little bit sloppy in the execution. I don't think it was so much his fault as it was, you know, his lack of kind of chemistry with Jericho and working on that maneuver. So a little bit of lack of chemistry early on, a kind of a slow building to them kind of working their way towards getting a feel for each other. But that definitely was worked out by the end of the matchup, as it definitely progressed to a very nice ending. But as we went along here, things definitely picked up. Jake Hager ended up getting involved. Aubrey Edwards basically trying to get him away whilst also keeping an eye on the action as well. So we ended up having the rest of SCU come down, attack Hager, get him out of there. But Aubrey ended up getting distracted. So Jericho tried to do the heelish move, hit Sky with the belt, which was subsequently ended up turning into Sky hitting the TKO, which ended up for the very close two count. Everybody in the building definitely felt like that was going to be the three count, and myself at home included. I thought that was going to be me actually getting my prediction right, but, you know, that was not the case at all. But, you know, some nice back and forth action after that, you know, some very quick pace happening afterwards, and you could see that's kind of where I thought the matchup was going to go from the beginning. But then it kind of hit a very quick roadblock, as after Sky ended up getting caught with a code breaker, then things ended up just kind of ending right as the Lion Tamer was locked in, and that was kind of it, you know, just Jericho ended up retaining. There was no, you know, shenanigans. There was no heelishness. There was no, you know, Jericho locking it in with a steel chair or anything, you know, to beforehand, or him like cracking him in the back with a pipe to make him more susceptible. It seemed like for all of the buildup that they had with Scorpio Sky being on a hot streak and everything, I get that they didn't want to change the title here, but it just seemed like a little bit of an odd blow-off for something that could have been built to a little bit better, at least for the finish of the matchup. I think that that could have been a much more solid ending at the very least, and I think that Jericho could have definitely at least done kind of similarly to what he did to Cody, where he kind of stomped on him a bit, you know, made it look a little more vicious, because even the Lion Tamer wasn't even locked in that properly, so it made for an awkward kind of finish to a matchup, and I think that they definitely could have put Scorpio Sky over much better, given that they were trying so hard to put him over leading up to this matchup. So it was just a little odd, and I think their chemistry was just a little bit off. So I think overall this was not the prime night for Dynamite. As a matter of fact, I think this may be overall my least favorite night of Dynamite, and that's not saying a whole lot, because I still very much enjoyed the full 2 hours of the night, and I think that the angle work in particular was still very much on point, and the Dark Order video package was insane. And I think that given some tweaks and given some little minor things here and there, it could have been a phenomenal night. But it's just one of those things where leading into a holiday, there was definitely some holding back. So I think given another week from now, I think a lot of things will change, and I think we'll have a Dynamite episode of Dynamite. Forgive my awful puns. I'm leading into Thanksgiving and I'm very, very tired. But definitely check out. I'm also going to have a week of this on Last Word on ProWrestling.com. I'm going to do a write-up, a recap of AEW Dynamite on there as well. So if you want to hear my voice in written format, definitely go ahead and check me out on there as well. So again, I've been your host, as always, Zach Perez at Spots High on Twitter. But for now, goodbye and good night.